Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 13 of The Dive.
Good job. I like it.
I am Kobe, joined by Azale and Freak today. I have to apologize first because I'm a little bit sick, but we wanted to get this episode out so we have something, for the group stages, for the plans, for MSI.
You're a warrior, Kobe.
So if I sneeze or something, I'll just try and lean really far away from the mic.
But when you blow your nose, do it really loudly and right into it.
Right on you. Right?
Not on me.
We can give the subtitles, for Chocolate Rain.
There we go.
Mic to breathe, right? We can put that in there.
Perfect.
But MSI coming up soon. First game is May 1st of play-ins. And the format is going to be 8 teams are in the play-in. They're split up into 2 different groups, Group A, Group B. The top teams from each group will then go on to face off against Flash Wolves as well as Team Liquid. The winners of that advance directly to join IG, G2, as well as SKT. And then the losers of that best of 5 will also play off against each other. So we will get guaranteed at least one emerging region team into the main stage to make up the final 6 teams that will be playing off in the MSI proper.
Yep. And it also means there's 2 chances for both Team Liquid and Flash Wolves to make it through, even if they stumble the one time, or if they both stumble, then of course one of them's out. But you're going to see at least one of those teams for sure. And even if one of them does make a mistake, or the team is really good and beats them, they still got a second chance through.
And part of the hype for this year's draw has been that a lot of the favorites, in particular, were all drawn into Group A. And this is Team Liquid's, the group that they play first as well.
Yep.
So added a little bit more hype to it. 1907 Fenerbahce, Fongvu Buffalo, and Isaris Gaming, all kind of at the top echelon of the play-in stages, 4 teams. And it makes Group A definitely the group of death. People are talking about, is it really? Yes.
Are you sleeping on the Oceanic Australian Rules
the
football
bombers?
Team Bombers? Yeah, how
so,
you?
I did do a review, a cast review for Spawn on some of their games, and it was a Bombers game. And their jungler was just destroying, right?
Yeah.
So their jungler has been destroying the entire region. He's a Korean import, Balkan, and he was quite good. But overall, I think that the competition in their group is just way too strong.
Yep.
Vietnam has a history of success. Turkey, I think, is probably the region closest to Vietnam, even though Vietnam usually historically has had the edge over Turkey with a little bit quicker game times and play style. But I think those two are for sure kind of mad that they're in the same group because only one gets to get out of the group, right? I feel like if one was Group A and Run was Group B, then those would be the two.
Right. They'd be satisfied facing in a best of 5, assuming they both lost round 1. And then, that's kind of unlucky, right? That they essentially have to determine who's getting out in 2 best of 1 instead of 1 best of 5. I think that's definitely a bit unlucky, but we'll see what happens. And it's probably the team out of Group A that comes out.
And theoretically, it might end up being a best of 3, right? If they both 2-0 the other teams and go 1-1 against each other, then you have to have a tiebreaker. And at the end of the day, everyone is looking at Turkey and Vietnam as the 2 strongest regions. If they are truly the 2 strongest regions, then they would have had to fight off at some point anyway, right? Even if they're in Group A, Group B, if they go up, if they may play each other or they could possibly advance. So you kind of would have to beat a really tough opponent at some point. Hopefully for them, they can look at it through a positive and maybe we'll get to see some really interesting strategies, since it is best of 1s, right? It's not the best of 5. They have a lot of preparation goes into that, where if you have your sneaky strategy, it's time to bring it out, right? It's time to try to knock down your toughest competition, because if you're saying, hey, anyone from Group B is free, then even if you lose to TL, well, you're going to play probably against one of them or someone that they just beat. So I think whoever comes out of there will be feeling pretty confident. But I know I've seen a lot of the OC guys, Rusty and Zvon and all Atlas, all those guys seem pretty sad about the draw, because I think people were pretty hyped on Bombers this year and felt pretty good about their chances.
Yeah.
But there always seems to be some stuff happening for the OCE teams that goes a little bit unlucky.
Yeah, part of the reason why people are so hyped, it's not just because of the history of Vietnam and Turkey and their success, but 1907 Fenerbahce, this iteration, has Kirei. Kirei's played both here and in Europe, I still follow him on Twitter from when he was an NA player. Mm-hmm. And I feel like every time he posts some picture, he's rank one
on
European West.
Oh, okay.
And he just always holds it. He is the shot caller for the team. He has a really interesting view too, where he talks about his solo queue mentality, because people are always asking him, you know, rank one, how do you get rank one so often? Europe West is one of the biggest servers.
Yeah.
And he always talks about playing 100% for his lanes rather than focusing on, you know, optimal jungle path or whatever. It's so much for him about communication with those lanes and like getting them to play around, you know, what the current game state is and trying to keep them all online. So I just think that
shot calling solo queue.
I just think that is so cool that, you know, he went over to Turkey, you know, and he's this big shot call. He won MVP for the league, by the way. I just think that he's going to be one of the biggest strengths for them coming into it. Cause you talk about best of ones and coming up with these strategies. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. And I mean, they dominated regionally. They were 16-2, in their regular season. You know, they
went on a 20
single game.
They went a 20 game win streak to end the season.
Yeah. In playoffs, they didn't drop a single game. It's 3-0. So obviously extremely dominant. And one of the things that always kind of gets me excited is like, you know, Kyrie, obviously really good jungler, but also his most played was Kindred. And I'm a big Kindred fan. Yep. So I think that's always really cool when people have a little bit of a different flavor coming out of some of the other regions, you know, like trying to bring some of these different picks, I think can be exciting when teams aren't necessarily going to be as practiced against it or as comfortable playing against it. But then again, sometimes it's just always going to get banned.
Yeah. I mean, people could also be hyped because their bottom lane player, Hades, was a one-trick Yasuo player. Mm. And so he still got to use some Yasuo games. So they, you know, they have other angles that they can go for, any sort of surprises like that for people. And
yeah,
best of ones are going to be big.
And you got also Funko Buffalo coming over, who is, as far as I can tell, the same roster as Worlds last year. So they're going to kind of go for round two here. You know, good luck. They went 2-4 in group stage, which is not, you know, the worst, right? Like they actually had some decent stuff going on. So, I mean, we talked about the other really strong teams here where, you know, Vietnam's going to be pretty crazy. They're going to be pretty scary. Like they've continued to do really well and like make it to MSI group stage. We're like 2-3 years in a row now where like Vietnam is clearly the one that comes through and is team number six. So, I remember having discussions before of like, hey, when does Vietnam become like a major region? When do they get to auto seed? Well, when they do what the LMS does and make it out of groups every time in the main stage, right? Like, I remember asking that question or getting that question asked to me on stream last night. It was like, when does Vietnam overtake LMS? Like, well, when they do those things, right? Like when you get out of groups every time, when you start doing well at Worlds as well. And they're getting closer and closer, right? They won 2 games at Worlds last year. So I think this is a good shot at a team. They can get a best of 5 against TL. Like you win that one. Something that's really impressive. You turn heads like this, you know, that could be a really good dark horse.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it is interesting because so no major region team has ever actually lost their best of 5 going into MSI.
Yep.
For the first time ever, it did happen once with LMS at Worlds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the needle is moving a little bit in that direction. And this is the year that everyone has kind of talked about as LMS being the weakest that they've ever been by far. Flash Trolls did qualify, but they were nowhere near as dominant as they have been in the past. They lost a lot of their best players. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are opportunities for some of these other regions to maybe, you know, take over the LMS's spot, you know, if LMS is sliding and these guys are improving. And it's always exciting for me to watch the Vietnamese teams because I always think of, you know, Gigabyte Marines and teams like that and Fungbu Buffalo. These are teams that play, you know, a very, very fast style and it's a very bloody region. So it's pretty exciting to watch a lot of their games.
Yeah. I mean, even though everyone's like, oh yeah, the Gigabyte Marines was their own team and mm-hmm. that was a unique style. They do still play very quick. They have very big gold average early on, pre 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And watching some of the games, the play past 15 minutes is also extremely quick because it feels like they're always searching out for, you know, the next skirmish. And then you see just so many people collapse from all around the map. So it just feels like everybody is down or whatever play is about.
They're down to play. Yep.
And fast aggressive play has been good before, right? You again talk about Gigabyte Marines where like they shocked people and they picked up some wins because of that kind of stuff. I think back to Cloud9 at Worlds where they were just like, no, we're going super aggressive, we're going super hard and we're going to fight you. And they had like one of the most impressive best of fives. They beat Afrika doing that kind of stuff. So I think Fighting Buffalo can do the same kind of thing where if they're out and aggressive early on, like this can do well for them.
To me, one of the themes almost of Worlds last year was that the more aggressive, proactive teams are the ones that took over.
Mm-hmm. Vitality.
Oh, this charge. The charge that was kind of led by Vitality, Invictus Gaming, C9, all of these types of teams, that is a very similar kind of play style. So it's about honing that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For Group B, it is Mega from SEA, Vega Squadron from CIS, INTZ from Brazil, as well as Detonation Focus Me from Japan. Any big favorites you guys have there?
I don't know. I think it's actually all fairly close. Like, we had, the first time ever, Japan, I think it was actually DFM because they finally won regionally, finally. They actually made it to the best of fives at Worlds. Like, that was cool, right? They finally stepped up there. But these are all regions where it's like, oh, yeah, I remember seeing your team do well before. seeing teams from those regions do well before. Right? Like OST never makes it to playoffs, right? Uh-huh. They always fail out in groups. It's like, well, even if Bombers is a good lineup, you have to show me that you can actually do this, right? And for Vietnam, it's like, well, you guys have actually made main stage before. So, I totally believe in you guys for recent track record. But, INTZ, remember them beating Edward Gaming? And that was, an absurd, that was their first game of Worlds, 2016 or something. It was like, mm-hmm. Oh, wow, okay. Are you a real team? And they didn't win anymore. But, that was impressive. I feel like I still, maybe I shouldn't anymore, but, I always hold out hope for the CIS teams. I feel like they get really close to winning a bunch of these things. So I down the line, I feel like these are a lot of good teams.
I actually think that the CIS team Vega are my heavy favorites.
Okay.
I don't think that this one is as close as people are giving it to. I know that INTZ, a lot of the Brazilian fans wanted Flamingo there instead.
Yep.
That was a big upset in the finals.
And so then they were kind of like, oh, you're going at the end. I'm sure that they'll get behind the team. They're the representative.
Yeah, VRTT.
But it is always kind of shocking when stuff like that happens, because we even had a little bit of that in North America where, our top three teams were very close. And then even in the finals, people thought that TSM had won it, and then Team Liquid won. They're like, oh!
I have a little bit of a mini rant on this, just because I think it's when people are like, we're not sending the best team, we're just sending one of our worst.
Well,
teams.
They won.
They won, yeah. Right? And that, whether you want to say, but they just choked. Oh, well, it was just unlucky. Those things can happen in MSI too.
Yeah. Well, NA is known for choking. What are you talking about? You want the team that chokes?
Well, and I mean, even just for INTZ, right? Even if Flamingo was better all year long, if they did lose in the finals to this team, why do you not believe that they could then lose to other teams at the MSI group stage, right? That is the thing that never really makes sense to me, is mm-hmm. it's like, you can say that, if you want to make the argument that over the course of the season, this team was better than that team, but that's not always what it comes down to, right? I saw actually a fair bit, Vettius, I think, tweeted out that he thought TSM was the better team than Team Liquid. And there was actually a lot of agreement to that, which I found pretty surprising, because I just think that it's one of those situations where, TSM did have some very impressive performances, and you could make the argument that, at their best, maybe looked more dominant than Team Liquid. And I think people really do look to kind of the thrown game from Sven and say, hey, well, if that was different. But then take one step back. TSM had a reverse sweep Cloud9 to get there, right? And then Cloud9 fans are like, well, yeah, but if TSM is better than Team Liquid, well, we're better than TSM, so we should be good, and it's like, well, yeah, but at the end of the day, you did get reverse swept, both of you, right? You lost.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, TSM 80 carries and choking in a climactic moment when it means you're going to advance or not, right? Not new. I'm Client Doublelift, but the point is, chokes matter, and they're part of how you move forward.
Yeah, I want to get more into this, but I was going to save it until we get to Team Liquid. Because you touched on something that is a lot deeper, and I even want to go down the
Cloud9. The INTZ thing just reminded me.
For sure.
I actually think that Detonation Focus Me is the challenger to Vega in this group, though. Again, these are the guys. I've played against them on NA solo queue, years ago before the Japanese server. So maybe I have some bias, but they have also been the longest standing team. They went 20-1 in spring. They 3-0'd their finals. It's the same guys that the Saros, the Heimerdinger guy. And mm-hmm. They have a lot of different looks that they can bring out as well. I think that is probably the closest for me. a challenger to Vega, but I just think that people are really underestimating the CIS and Vega. They defeated Gambit pretty convincingly.
Yeah, they 3-0'd them, I think.
To me, yeah. And those are some players where they have history, so I kind of can know where I'm judging by for that.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably going to be the matchup, is them versus Flash Wolves, but Detonation Focus Me, I think, definitely has a shot of.
It's really,
it too.
Really interesting too, because I have still heard some hype around G4, the mega mid laner. Yeah. He's a guy who's been seen internationally before as well. This is the LST, which is basically SEA. It's League of Legends SEA Tour, and that's Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, Philippines, and Thailand. So it's all these different regions. But one of the things that I think is maybe kind of concerning for their region is they have, I think, a lot less experience just even of regular season professional play, because their format is actually essentially a tournament. They have a 4-day group stage and then 3 BO3s and a BO5, right? So that is their whole split. So it's like a lot less games played together than some of these other teams will have.
Yep.
That being said, you are essentially playing the MSI format, so maybe you have some comfort with kind of like how it's going to look, but I do think that that's tough if you're only playing like a handful of games throughout the split, and some of these other teams are putting in so many more games. Now, I don't know how the practice hours compare,
right,
but it is still different, obviously, stage games versus scrim games.
Yeah. For example, for Mega, like their two Korean imports, their jungler and support, joined the org in mid-March. Like, we're practically done with the spring regular season by that point in NA, and they join in mid-March, and then in April they play the national qualifier, then they play the minor, then they win the tournament, and it's like, okay, over the course of 2.5 weeks, you qualified for MSI, and your players joined a month ago. All right, well, you're the rep, like, good luck getting your practice in, and like, that's the timeline. Like, that's what it is. So, yeah, absolutely, products can be a really big deal, but, I mean, they did smash, like, so we'll see how that goes. They're clearly at least you're really strong domestically, but that doesn't mean that much. It's a fairly weak overall region. But yeah, to your point, like just the evidence of it's a really quickly put together team.
Yeah, I think that good sign for all the teams in Group B is that Flash Wolves losing, Maple, Karsa, all of their star players really took away a lot of the kind of credit that everyone gave for international events, because everyone was used to like, yep, it's the same Flash Wolves. We know all these players. We're going to give them credit. They're going to make it out. They're going to be, guaranteed win. They're going to, do well in groups.
Yeah.
But having the big exodus of so many of their star players really brings it into doubt. And then also their regular season was much more contested. They were like 9-5 or something like
that. Yeah, they were like vying for first, and they went on like a 2 or 3 match loss streak to go into playoffs. They were actually 0-2 head-to-head against the team they beat in the finals 3-0. So it was like, against Mad Team. So it was like,
literally Team Liquid TSM.
Yeah, right. It's like exactly that thing happens where this is, except they 3-0'd without their verse sweep happening.
Yeah.
So that's also, right, they had to, like, bring in new players. They have Rather on loan from Griffin, right, Korean mid laner.
Yeah.
Xiaosi's actually been really good for them. They're standing for Sword Art leaving, of course. Hanabi is still good domestically. And, like, if you saw them at MSI last year, like, Flash Rolls were actually pretty good. They won the group stage of MSI last year. Like, that's the thing they want to point out is, like, LMS sucked at Worlds. They actually clapped at MSI. Until they lost they lost to what, like the actual winners in the semifinal. They lost to RNG coming into it, so it's like, okay, unlucky there. And Hanabi popped off back then. Xiaosi's doing pretty well, like Betty's solid, so we'll see how that goes.
And to their credit, still the only team that had ever lost yet was from LMS, but that was the third seed.
Yeah.
I do believe that was their third seed. MSI is a tougher, like a taller order. And one of the reasons it's never happened is because you're not fighting, one of the lower ranked teams from a major region. You're fighting the best team from the major region. So still it is, I think, a tall order to perhaps take down Flash Wolves.
Yeah. Is there any team you want to keep an eye on from any of these groups, a surprise team or something? Because I was pretty curious to see how the LATAM combination was going to go with North and South joining together. So I'm a little bit hyped to see what Isurus can do, but then as soon as they got drawn into Group A with already Turkey and Vietnam, then I was kind of like, oh man, that's going to be a rough one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be interested to watch the Bombers just because I know a lot of my friends are really excited for it. Pacers excited for it, and Spawn and Rusty and Atlas, all these guys. I mean, Spawn sent me a question yesterday. He's like, oh, who's going to get a Group A and why is it going to be the Bombers easily? So I think it'll be fun to watch and see, you know, how they're able to actually perform because, you know, this is supposed to be, you know, one of the best rosters they have put forth. And, you know, yes, they did get drawn into a really tough group, but that always does give you an opportunity to prove yourself against some of the toughest competition. And if you can do it, then that speaks a lot for the improvement of the region.
Yeah. And I think especially for international competitions like this and on patches where we are jumping two patches here for most of the regions, 9.7 and 9.8. And I think there were significant changes leading up to this, which, you know, they usually try and keep it pretty stable, but there were a lot of champion changes, rune changes as well, that might shift, you know, what you can do in a group stage like this. You know, two best of ones, right? If you practice some style, you are able to keep it secret, and, you know, there's something that you're aware of and you want to pull out, you can have a super big impact super quickly.
Yep.
So I kind of want to take a break before we go into group stage, main stage teams, and we'll talk about Flash Wolves and Team Liquid there as well, to go over the patch. Because there's a lot of good stuff.
There is. So the thing I want to bring up really quickly, you mentioned rune changes and whatnot. As far as champion changes, across the two patches, there were 5 nerfs and 21 buffs. Champions nerfed and champions buffed. So it's like, okay, Sylas is probably gone. Kayle's probably gone. Lissandra's probably gone. And there's like a Zed nerf that's like mostly Siliki focused. But there's 21 champions who are stronger now. And it's like, well, no one's seen a Mumu competitive, but like, I mean, we've got a lot of extra power. Like, what if there's like, I'm just saying, for example, pulling stuff out. What if there's like that sick of Mumu team fight comp and you're going to smite Baron and then get an engage over the wall?
MF the Mumu, baby, let's go.
Yeah, MF is also not seen in pro, but actually
PTA,
pretty good.
PTA, Blade the Rune King, everyone's playing it in its own.
No, I saw the win rate as well. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, Jad loves the Mumu. I'm pretty sure I know where these buffs came from.
Trundle.
Yeah. But, oh my God. So I tried it. So I was like, you know what? I played a Mumu 6 years ago on an international tournament. I'll get back in there. And okay, he's definitely stronger.
Yeah.
And he definitely does exactly what he used to do to me. But it's still so frustrating to me playing a champion that just has to waddle around the whole map. As a jungler, my champion has to have a speed boost or a dash.
Just run Predator.
Or I just feel useless.
Like, run Predator.
I mean, I could run Predator. I don't think that you should run Predator on a Mumu.
That's fair.
That could be Freak's advice. But right after that, you know what I played? Sejuani. And Sejuani has a lower win rate. Sejuani feels 1,000 times better.
That's fair.
At least in high ELO, because there are just so many situations where you need a dash or you need a longer range initiation that doesn't make you commit. Sejuani is just such a dynamic tank, with the fact that she doesn't have to go in with her ultimate. You can throw it from so far away. Plus, she has the dash. She does a lot of damage now, actually.
Yeah.
They also buffed Cinder Hulk. I guess that applies to all, you know, both of them. But
Sure.
I just think that in the case where you're looking for that tank jungler, Sejuani is your champion. And
the top.
I think that we're going to see a lot of Sejuani presence at MSI.
And I think when Sejuani comes in, Trundle should come in as well, right?
Oh,
like, I think Trundle jungle has always been a really good matchup into Sejuani. Trundle had gotten a number of buffs in a row as well.
Yep.
I do think you can play Trundle top into some of the tank matchups, but I don't think that, like, I don't think we're going to see as many tanks top as perhaps some people are expecting. You know, there has been a lot of talk about the tank meta and this sort of stuff in top lane, but a lot of the picks that have been getting buff, I've been seeing like have more success elsewhere. You know, Nautilus got buffs. I've been seeing more success with actually AP Nautilus mid or Nautilus support. You know, Ornn, you know, did get some buffs. Maybe we'll see him. There is, you know, like some Mundo buffs, but Mundo just never gets played in competitive. Like, I still think it's good against a really AP heavy team, but we don't see people playing it. So like, I don't think that there's going to be this massive paradigm shift in the top lane. Maybe there will, but It's
tough. Yeah, I saw so many people jumping on what seemed like they were even memeing with the tank age of tanks is coming
yeah,
now.
It's not.
Sometimes, you know, the groupthink really does take over. Looking at the actual buffs, though, in addition to Trundle, like they're buffing some tank counters. So yeah. If the tanks, you know, are super prevalent, not only Trundle, but also Fiora, as specifically for a top lane answer there. So it is interesting that they, like you said, there's 21 champions getting these buffs. Yes, a significant amount of them are tanks. Not all of them are tanks. And some of them are also tank answers.
Yep.
So I'm super excited to actually, you know, see if that does come out, because things like Singed, especially to me, who can serve both as a tanky champion for you and very good into a lot of tanks, is something that, you know, a fairly significant buff like this to me makes it super interesting, because there aren't a lot of players that have time on these champions. So then coming into a tournament like this, if you put in the work, if you put in the Thorthought, and you kind of predict what's going to emerge, then you can gain such a big advantage.
Yeah, and I just think that especially with the quality of top laners at this tournament, tanks are so scary, because you're not gonna, like, well, you can, but it's very rare in competitive play that people will save their last pick for like a Cho'Gath or an Ornn or something like that, right? Like, it's almost always going to be blind picked. And if you're going to blind pick your Nautilus or Cho'Gath or whatever into the Shy and Khan and Wonder and these guys who are absolute beasts on carries, they can already play Fiora. Fiora, like, especially when you look at Nautilus, it's actually hilarious how bad that matchup is, because you can actually stun Nautilus on an auto attack because of his passive root, right? Like, now it's a 2 second.
Auto attack is like,
at least he can like bait this, though, right? Like, if I'm playing Nautilus in a Fiora, I will for sure like do one of these and be like, okay, you're posted,
and then your 50% attack speed reduction just wins the trade.
At least I get that, and then I get half shock off. But I mean, yes, you are still right. Like, that's the thing. If I ever go for a hook, like, any player on land should be able to get that one.
Rise and stuff, people are still going to be very happy to play into a lot of those matchups.
I was going to think it's more likely you see things like Vladimir and Gangplank, who are, like, already, like, in the meta. People are really, really, like, happy and willing to play these things. And, like, those are the ones you run up in, like, okay, Cho's good into Vlad. Like, that's not the one you want to go for. But, like, just throwing up barrels on people and, like, ulting your bot lane is, like, going to be really good. And that's going to be a really popular pick if we do see the tank meta.
Yeah, I do think that. Yes, tanks are going to be better for teams that tanks are their best strategy. However, to me, I'm still of the opinion that having flex solo laner picks in champion select, like Ryze, like Akali, you know, these super powerful 1v1 champions that have a lot of options later on in the game, is still going to be a dominant strategy, especially, as you're saying, because of the caliber of so many of the solo laners that are at this tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see if people like are going to jungle, like jungle tanks, if they're going to try to be willing to actually like withstand and play tank top. And then, because you do have an incredibly strong 5v5 if you are going to play tank jungle, tank top, and you know, you have like dominant bot lane, you have a strong team fighting mid laner, like these sort of compositions are extremely good at 5v5, but it's also so difficult to deal with all the split pushing. It's so difficult to deal with the early stages and to win 2v2s, and you can sometimes get so put behind in those early minutes. Yeah.
I think I will for sure be seeing Sejuani. Turtle gave me a secret jungle pick, if you want a secret tank. He said Predator Ornn is busted.
Predator Ornn ganks.
Because you never have to go back to base, freak.
Okay.
You can just be out there juggling. Then you build your talisman yourself.
I see the idea of Ornn jungle and why it can be good. That's kind of cute. And I don't think he ganks anything.
When you Predator, your ultimate, when you cast it, it will do the extra damage.
Great. I can run Airy for that, too.
Are you with me?
Are you convinced yet?
I haven't tried it yet, but I really want to, because he made it sound super fun. And Ornn did get these, admittedly, late game buffs.
Yeah.
So they'll be less important for jungle, because you'll be a lower level and you don't get, you know, your passive items.
I'm not on board
until later.
I'm completely not on board.
But I am on board, at least for solo queue.
I saw some tweets too, actually, about that. I think it was like Metaphor tweeting that like Dardoch told him about this pick too, and that Ornn jungle was nuts from Dardoch, and then he tried it and he said he was convinced, and Dardoch was retweeting it. So I'm like, Maybe, but it reminds me more of when everyone was like, Pike Jungle is nuts, right? And like, and it was fun and cool for solo queue, but never really came out in competitive.
Yeah.
My guess is it probably won't be a competitive thing.
Yeah, but I'm going to try that.
Yeah, get in there.
Go for it. Let's see what else we got. There was a lot of it around conversation around Top Lane and Tank specifically because of all these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has been solo laner, like kind of lane dominant focus for quite a while now.
And like Thornmail got buffed and Ruinkin got nerfed. Like there's other, you know, small things that kind of matter.
Yeah. Also, so many of the defensive runes, Overgrowth, Conditioning, or whatever it's called, a lot of them got, you know, pretty decent buffs as well. So if you are going to tank and you're going Aftershock and a lot of these small runes that you're taking before.
Yeah. Overgrowth got better. I don't know if Conditioning got changed for a while, but.
It might be next or something. I think that was on the list.
Okay.
But Overgrowth, either way. Sure.
Yeah.
So that might contribute to it. What do you think about the Gnar one? Because people were freaking out. They're like, oh my God, 30 seconds off. And I was like, can you even transform? Can you transform that much? It basically feels to me like whenever you transform, then your ult will be ready.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not possible to have it up twice during an ult.
Really? Even if you keep hitting stuff?
So I guess, are you able to, can you refill your Rage Bar during Mega Gnar, or does it time out always?
I'm pretty sure.
It always times out.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you can, extend it in some way.
I don't play Gnar, so I actually don't know, but I don't remember ever seeing them extend forever. I mean, either way,
not forever for sure.
Yeah. But max CDR on that ult is still 18 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is just like, yeah, no, you don't, I feel like I would see clips of that happen, right? But maybe I'm just actually totally wrong, so I'm not going to really speculate. But I think Gnar is another champion that is viable now, right? And I think there's a lot of champions that are they are now viable. And if a team wants to put in the solo queue hours and then take over the scrim schedule, say, hey, I want to put in 5 Gnar games. But if no one's scrimming Nautilus against you, you're I'm not going to play Gnar into Fiora. I'm kind of picking myself. So it's both those stars have to align where your team can spend the scrim times and you are in scrims where it matters. And that's what academy teams can be for and whatnot. But I think there's going to be a lot of champions that won't be discovered at MSI, but we'll see them in week one of the summer split because, now the champ's ready without changes.
I think one thing with Gnar that is really nice, I don't think you can do the two also in one cooldown or anything like that. But even just for trading in lane, having the Gnar alt up is actually pretty nice. Even just for your lane trades, you can essentially just go aggressive, jump forward, use the alt, try to get a beneficial trade. You used to see a lot of people, even in high elo solo queue, just using the alt essentially to instantly clear a wave, right? Scooping all the minions and just comboing down the minions to actually get a really quick base. And 30 seconds off the cooldown, I think, is pretty impactful for that sort of stuff. And is pretty impactful, I think, especially if you're trying to play 2v2 around top lane, because having that ultimate up, 30 seconds more often, every time your jungler wants to come up, you can have a better chance of having the ultimate available, of actually trying to go for a kill, of trying to go for a dive, these sorts of things. So we'll be interesting, because Gnar is another pick that I think is very blind pickable when it's in the meta and is very safe. It's kind of one of those hard to punish picks. So especially if you're looking at it through Team Liquid point of view.
I challenge that slightly. I think just we're in a different metagame now, because it used to be that the good counters to Gnar were aggressive, agile, fast top laner. Things like Old Aurelia, for example, were used to be the counter picks. Yasuo was a really good one as well. You'd kill the boomerang, then you can't even use his Q anymore. And now we're in a metagame where people are actually willing and excited and eager to play a Kali and Aurelia. And okay, not Yasuo right now, but he's probably just outside that kind of next in line. So I actually don't think we're in a good metagame for a blind pick Gnar. Because the normal counter picks are there and teams are ready to play around them. Back when Aurelia was a good counter pick, it was but you'll just last it under turret and then you'll just team fight them. And a team now will be well, no, this is Wonder. He's just going to kill you under turret when Yanko's ganks with Skarner. And then we're going to 1-4 you to death. We're ready to play that play style. So I think this is not a good style to blind pick Gnar in.
To be fair, I think Gnar statistically actually has a winning matchup against Akali. I don't even think that's that bad of a matchup. And Aurelia, I think it was more old Aurelia that was the Gnar counter, where you had a guaranteed point and click stun, because he poked you at all. You max D, you dash to his face and you stunned him. And then you went for an all in, right? I actually think it's harder to pull off that sort of a, an all-in on Nahr now, like, because he has fairly high move speed, because he, like, it's harder to hit a range stun on a ranged character who has decent move speed. I could be wrong about that.
Okay.
But my experience has also been, you know, in competitive play, when we did see even Aurelia coming out in the past into Nahr, it wasn't even that, like, it was impossible for them to pull off the all-ins, even when it was considered a counter. It was just people in competitive play rarely find the opportunities to, like, go aggressive enough to actually complete that, right? Because the Nahr is just throwing boomerangs from max range and playing it really safe and slow. And the Aurelia, to get an advantage, like, would have to go aggressive and have to all-in, or she would just get chipped out and be forced to base.
Sure.
And, like, at the highest level, yeah, like, some of these guys can pull that off and are willing to play those sort of risky styles. But I still think that, like, Nahr doesn't really have, like, a lot of really bad matchups besides stuff that I think is like super, super aggressive. Like, I know Wukong is supposed to be considered, like, insanely bad for Nahr, right? But, like, no one's going to play that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I seem to remember Caps playing.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh,
okay. They'll lane swap.
Professional game.
Like, old Fnatic, like, swap all their players around. To close loop on Nahr, I looked it up. The ult does not get any longer. It's 15 seconds. Yeah. And then you're tied for 15 seconds. So even like in all cases, you are 30 seconds between ults.
Okay.
So it's actually not possible.
But you'll just have it when you transform.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll always be available at rank 3 transform.
That just feels good then.
Yeah. I think that's really great.
That's cool. All right. Well, let's apply these patch discussions to the main stage teams and get into, there's a lot of actually interesting questions that have been floating around. So obviously, we very lightly touched on Team Liquid and Flash Wolves, but I think we can talk about them here as well, because they are heavily favored. There's no guarantee that they're getting through. Both of them, well, at least one of them has to get through. Only one of them can fail because they have to fail twice.
One or two will get through, and one or two of TL and Flash Wolves will get through.
But let's start with Team Liquid, because so much of that discussion has been around Team Liquid. And we've seen so many people discounting Team Liquid, saying that they have no chance, even though people are also talking so much about the tank changes and it being, you know, so good for impact.
Sure.
How do you guys feel? Because we talked on it a little bit before, Azale, with the TSM and the Cloud9, about the situation of Team Liquid representing North America and how they can do versus some of the powerhouses that are going. IG, SKT, G2.
I mean, I talked about this. I was actually on Euphoria a couple days ago and we talked about this a little bit. And, you know, Frostcurrent and Dracos were telling me that, like, a lot of the analysts for the regions and everything were heavily discounting TL. Like, everyone, it feels like, is kind of making it out that TL have no chance, that it's these top three, and then it's, you know, then the rest of the dregs of the competition. And I just don't really see it like that. I don't think that TL is favored to win, certainly. But I don't think that, like, the gap is so massive between these teams that it's undoable, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, the easiest point of comparison has to just be last year's MSI, right? Where Team Liquid actually was taking games off of all of these teams. They took games, I believe, off of RNG, off of the Korean representatives. They took, like, you know, they were winning games against all these teams. And this is a tournament where they went to a tiebreaker after Olay subbed himself out, after they had Joey coming in, who they had zero practice with, and they lost one or two games with him. I'm not actually sure.
Yeah.
And Pobelter was getting, let's be honest, heavily outperformed by these other mid laners, right? Do I favor Jensen over Faker or Rookie or Caps?
No,
I don't. But is he close enough? Like, is he close enough that, you know, when TL is playing a good game, or if they get a better draft, they can win? I certainly believe that. Mm-hmm. I think that the bottom lane for TL is such a strong point. Like, they dominated TSM in the finals. Doublelift was on average up 25 CSD at 15. Like, that's insane.
Yep.
And, you know, if you can draft in a way where Doublelift is having advantageous bot lanes, okay, maybe he's not Teddy, but, like, with a winning bot lane, you can perform against these sorts of teams. And I think the biggest concern for me, you know, is just, like, does Impact get forced into crazy carry versus carry matchups against the Shy or Wonder, whoever, and get blasted? And I think my hope is that they are playing stuff more like Gangplank or Nahr, or things that are more built to survive lane and have a lot of use outside of it, instead of the Jaces and the lane dominant stuff. But I think TL can compete. I don't think it's so one-sided as people are making it out to be at all.
Yeah, I do think that Team Liquid, like, if I did the stack ranking of those four, I would have them fourth. But I agree. I don't think they should be out of the conversation a lot of people are doing. I can see why people feel this way, though. So I want to take that perspective right now because let's kind of go over the landscape of North America, like you touched on before, with Cloud9 and TSM being very, very, all three of these teams being so close in skill. I think the feeling of so many fans and analysts would be so incredibly different, right? If the top talent wasn't so spread out. Basically, what we have is the best bottom lane in North America is on Team Liquid. The best top laner is on Cloud9. Yep. And the best mid laner is on TSM.
Yep.
And so it's like, we divided all of our powers and split them up into these three teams. And then they had an incredibly close playoffs. Mm-hmm. Best of five into another best of five. Games turning on a throw, games turning on someone getting caught, games turning on, individual plays. And so everyone's like, oh my God, this region's garbage and their representative is going to be garbage and they have no chance versus all of these 3-0 teams. But I can totally understand where, like, if we were sending a team that was Team Liquid with Licorice Chop and Bjergsen mid lane, I would feel the same way that these European fans do about G2. I'd be like, hell yeah, we're going to the top.
You know what's funny?
That team would be, if you could
combine me,
like that.
I actually don't feel that way.
Really?
So not that Licorice is not a better player than Impact and not that Bjergsen is not a better player than Jensen, but the differences there are not that large where I'm like, now they're going to, not that you're going to say they're going to win MSI, but like I already think Liquid's quite good.
Yeah.
Just think about like their players and how good they are. It's like, I don't remember how the matchup exactly went when Cloud9 played Fnatic World Semis, like so Jensen versus Caps. I don't remember it being egregious. I remember Caps being better because of course he's better, but like it was fine. It's not like Bjergsen's going to win that matchup. Like I still think Caps is just the best Western mid laner right now. Like, but Jensen's like about as close as Bjergsen is. Like that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's like Licorice got actually clapped by Broxah anyway. Like, it's not like suddenly, like, well, now we're going to be.
Well, you just said a top laner got clapped by a jungler. That's not really.
Wait, sorry, not Broxah. Whippo.
It was a little bit true.
But it's also
it was
true.
A little bit
but
true.
That's also true.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's me saying bad words. But I mean, honestly, and it's not even a clown on NA. Like, I like this version
top
of TL.
Laner, I agreed with it.
I feel you. That's jungle.
I never get beat by my top laner.
But. Anyway, what I want to say is, though I kind of agree that the likely result is Liquid are the fourth best team at MSI, like, their bot lane is incredible. Like, Jensen can hold up. Xsmithy always looks good at every international event, even when his team is inting. Like, this is enough, like, amazing players, world's caliber players, where, like, I could see this team making finals. There's a chance they win the thing. Like, this is a good Liquid that, like, I'm excited about. I think NA fans should be excited about.
All right, what do you think about their strategy, then? Are they going to embrace some of these buffed tanks or remain flexible? Because they had Impact 3-0 FlyQuest with carries every single game, right? Now, it is specific champions. I don't think that Team Liquid are going to have the same power that a lot of these other teams do, like G2, like IG, that are flexing Ryze both sides, like this super power pick. Impact can play something like that. His Victor as the counter pick into like Kennen or something like that was quite good. But for me, I don't get that same fear of a first pick Ryze from Team Liquid. So I think their strategy does have to be different.
Yeah.
And I think they do have to embrace the new patch and find something quickly that they're going to use to gain those victories that are upset victories. If we're going to place them at fourth, then even if it's by a small margin.
Yeah. For me, I don't think that they're going to move all of a sudden to tanks, because I think that if they were going to do that, they would have tried to do that in playoffs, right? And the fact that it wasn't just FlyQuest, it was actually no tanks whatsoever in the finals too, right? Mm-hmm. And they went five games. It's not like they just slammed their opponent and didn't have to show anything, right? When you're down 0-2, if you think, our best strategy is actually Ornn, then they would have picked Ornn.
But
right?
They played Gangplank.
But they played carries again. So I think what we see is what we get from TL.
A lot of these buffs, though, are kind of why the question is hanging, right?
Yeah. I just don't think the buffs are enough to actually warrant those picks in top lane. I don't think that, like, the champions that got the most significant buffs are not ones that really get pro play, right? Like the Mundo buffs have actually been really big. No one wants to play Mundo in pro play. You know, I think that Nautilus, again, like I said earlier, has been seeing more mid lane, more support. Like I think it's possible to see these picks, but I also think it's just as likely that we're just going to keep getting the same things, and maybe, you know, like there are more picks added. Singed would be cool. I think it was actually last MSI that he played it.
Yeah.
So certainly, you know, it is possible that he could pick up some of these, but I think we're probably going to see a similar style. We are going to see him on damage dealers. Smithy might be the one who changes more and is playing more
tanks. I think for sure he plays some Sejuani.
That is something I could definitely see. As far as Team Liquid expectations, you know, this is another thing like I was talking about a bit. You know, Dracos and Frostcurrent were saying that there's like a, it seems like kind of dicey if Mickey X is going to be able to play, right? And I think team, if he's playing, you put Team Liquid fourth. If he's not, hey, like, do you really bet on G2 with a backup support when, you know,
is
like,
good, but Double Wolf and Crojaday should win that. Like,
yeah.
Double Wolf and Crojaday might win that even with Mickey X. Like, they're really good. Crojaday especially.
Yeah.
G2 commented on it, and they do think that Mickey X is going to play. They were concerned about, like, how much practice time. Okay. So they did make a comment.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I think that, like, you know, I'm definitely going to agree and say that Team Liquid are kind of expected fourth. But if you lose your support, I think you have to knock down G2 a bit in the power rankings. But I mean, you know, I think it's a disappointment if Team Liquid is not taking games off of these teams. Mm-hmm. I think it's a disappointment 100% if they don't make it into the main stage and make it out of groups. I think that you for sure have to do that as a baseline, or that's a failure of a tournament.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think that, you know, they should go in and, all right, you go 0-6 against Europe, China, Korea, and they get 3-0'd in the semifinals. And you're like, great job, boys. We did it. We got out of groups. You know, that to me is a failure. So I think we should have high expectations for them to be competitive with these teams. And I think they have the ability to do so. So, you know, I'm pretty excited, you know, for them to at least show competitive games.
All right, let's talk about some G2 then, because you touched on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I am extremely excited to see this team. Because I did not watch G2 for all of the split. I watched them for some of the split, mm-hmm. and I tuned in for all the playoffs where they just played
Speed
Origin.
Run.
Yeah, and they absolutely smashed on Origin. And
so many people,
that was the whole playoffs.
Yeah,
so many people were like, oh my God, it's actually coming to fruition, where they bought a mid laner, the other best mid laner basically, and they moved their mid laner down to bottom lane, so they're going to have all this flexibility. And then they actually bring out the funnel. They have play all these mages in bottom side.
Yep.
And that is going to be incredibly exciting for draft phase. Do you think, because you were just talking about, you know, double lift versus perks and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that sort of flexibility will have the same impact on teams like SKT and IG as it did on Origin? Because I heard in the interview afterwards where, you know, their coach is talking about, yeah, it's because we know Origin and we wanted to shake up because we know that they won't deal well with the game state being abnormal. I think that they will still, you know, use funnel effectively, use, you know, all kinds of mages in the bottom side effectively. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very, very curious, though, to see how, you know, a team like SKT reacts, especially already knowing, like, that card has been played. I feel like these teams are also going to be prepping for the extra looks from G2.
And the other thing you have to remember is that out of 24 games, he played 6 non-marksman games. Yeah. So it's not
some
like
some are Sona.
Yeah. So it's not like he was really Sona, doing Nika, it Zoe, that much.
Yasuo and two others.
Yeah. He had a Jace game, a Yasuo game, Sona, Cassio, Nico. So, you know, like one of each of those, right? So certainly mostly he was just playing marksman, and that, you know, they were playing pretty traditionally. I think it's always something that you have to kind of have in the back of your mind. But I think based on how much they actually use it throughout the regular season, it's not something that you should be like throwing your bans towards or like building your whole strategy around. And I do think that, you know, especially for a team like SKT, there are teams in the LCK that utilize these strategies, especially, you know, like last year there was so much of that when when Marksman were out of it, you know, playing against Viper, like Griffin did those sort of strategies almost exclusively, right? So I think that SKT would be a team that would have a tremendous amount of practice against that. And not even just Griffin, like a lot of teams actually were running almost exclusively mage bot lanes for a while in the LCK. So you do have some of that preparation.
I mean, yeah, they dealt with the Talia Pantheon combo pretty well.
Yeah, the winless duo lane. Yeah. They haven't won any games in any major league.
Yeah. It's one of the big questions, though, because I've seen so many people, fans and analysts, saying G2 are the second best team. They're ranking them above SKT, which my immediate reaction was like, whoa, I feel like they're super underestimating SKT because SKT had a rocky road to spring, right? Their road through spring was not smooth.
Yeah.
But like, it does seem like going that extra, like I think that SKT have the best bottom lane at the entire tournament. And giving, like, saying that they're gonna be third seems like going pretty far to me. Where do you think you place them?
I mean, that's fair. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard for me to be like, oh yeah, for sure, let's put double Core JJ above, but I just have so much respect for Core JJ that, like, it's hard for it. Like, I can't undersell that. Like, I don't want to undersell
Teddy
that.
Teddy, Mata, and
I know you're right, and it's like, okay,
it's Teddy and Mata.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, so
they're the best follow.
Just because of Teddy, like, there's no chance. But like, I mean, Jackie Love and Balan are also really good. They don't have the same level of experience as those guys, but like, those guys are absurd, right? They're world champions, right? Like that's. Just right, outright, you can't undersell them. I think this is a really exciting tournament for bottom lanes. I think SKT is number one bot lane is a totally reasonable call. We'll see, right? I think Perks is really, really good. I enjoyed Perks' quote from the interview where he's like, bot lane is just worse than mid laners. Yeah. So he's like, so I'm just better than everyone now.
And I mean, I honestly just love Perks because
I do too.
He always comes up with some sort of
I love Perks.
Talk and
very memeable, for good or for bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to move on too quickly from G2 to SKT, but sure. I think people have probably the most questions about Jankos because he has had, you know, some struggles internationally. People often, you know, say he's a choker internationally and kind of in these big moments. And I think the other place where people are going to have the most questions for G2 is the bot lane, just because Perks has made the swap recently. Mm-hmm. How is he going to stack up against some of these incredible bot lanes that he's going to have to fight off against? And I think G2 can compete with them. I think G2's biggest strengths, though, are their solo lanes. Wonder and Caps have both been amazing. You know, Caps won the MVP, but I think Wonder could have easily been the European MVP. Like, I thought he was so good for them this year, and he has been really good. He was incredible at Rift Rivals, absolutely smashed the North American top laners. He has looked really good kind of over the last couple of years. So I think when you have such strong solo laners, that enables your jungler so much more, right? Like, that gives Jankos a lot of freedom. And I think that's partially why, you know, they had so much success playing things like Karthus and playing some of these other picks that we haven't seen in some of the other regions as often. So, you know, I think that is their greatest strength. And that's kind of why I'm so excited to watch a team like G2 go up against, you know, some of these other squads whose strengths certainly are the solo laners too, right? Like, IG, immediately you're going to think of, all right, well, Rookie and the Shy, right? Like, if you're a solo lane team who's supposed to slam people through lane, here's Rookie and the Shy. See if you can do it. Because that, I think, is such an exciting matchup. And that is what I'm most excited for G2. You know, like, a lot of people have huge hopes for this team. I think, Frostgrim was saying she thinks it's the best European team of all time. I think they have to kind of win something internationally before you can say that, because Fnatic's coming off of World Finals, right? But
even Fnatic from the Huni Reignover era, where they're also absurd.
But even so, people considering them on that level and like on paper, they are incredible.
Oh yeah.
So people are so excited for them, and I think it's going to be a really exciting tournament because of that.
Well, that's why the thing that I want to highlight for G2 and why I was like, I'm most excited for their team play is because I feel like it is that situation where I got to make my team Liquid, where I cherry picked Licorice.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And I cherry picked Bjergsen, because they literally took the world semifinalist Fnatic crown jewel, their mid laner.
World finalist.
me.
We forgot how semis went. We blocked that out. That's when world stopped last year.
Sorry, everyone got top four. Top nine
tied. Yeah, top four it ended.
Yikes. But they literally got to do that. They were like, boom, we're taking Cavs. And they already had Perks, who also had an amazing Worlds performance.
Yeah.
Perks was hard carrying games for G2 as a mid laner. And now, like, they've actually been able to make it work where everyone was just so shocked that they were going to have two mid laners on the same team and make this move down to bottom lane.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I'm like, so much cool stuff can happen with this team where, yes, they showed funnel. Yes, you can, you know, play mages bottom lane or mm-hmm. whatever. But like I just feel like every game that they play, I'm maybe looking forward to champion select and then trying to figure out what is their game plan for this game.
All right. So I have a little bit of a hot take for you guys. And I'm kind of curious to see what you think. So one of my concerns for G2, and this is a small concern, but I think that when G2 took Caps and added that to the team with Perks, I think that they made their competition so much worse in Europe, because I think you took the two by far best mid laners in the region and put them on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's no other mid laners in EU that are on that same level. Nukeduck has been strong. Nemesis has had his moments, but those two were like the guys competing against each other. And I think as a result, they weakened some of their competition because no one can match them, I feel, through the mid lane, right?
Sure, yeah.
And do you think that that then hurts you going into an international tournament against Faker and Rookie when Caps hasn't been actually playing against Perks all year and Perks hasn't been playing against Caps all year? Those are the two best mid laners. Are they now more likely to struggle against those guys at an international event?
I don't think so. Gut reaction. I think there have been a decent amount of other good mid lane performances. Europe always seems like they sprout up new strong mid laners. Yes, I mean, Perks and Caps are literally the peak two.
Yeah.
Some
of the best two in the whole world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is very hard to like put it on that level. I don't think it's going to hurt them that much, though. I still think that they get significant practice. Plus, they're still on the same team. It's not like they can't.
They can't do like lane tests.
It's not going to be the same, right? Because Perks is practicing, you know, bottom lane stuff like that. But I'm not super worried about it. Is my gut reaction?
Yeah, I'm not.
But it's interesting. Yeah, it's not like they're going to lose out on group about because of that.
No. Yeah. And I still think they're an amazing team, and I'm excited for them. My point isn't even to draw a conclusion. It's just something I've been thinking about. It's like if you want to prep for Faker or a Rookie. And your Caps, you wanted to play against Perks,
all
right?
Year. Yeah.
And now
at his peak playing mid lane.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And now the best guy, like the closest guys to that are on the same team and they're not playing the same role anymore.
And now you can scrim Jensen and now you can scrim, you know, Rookie and whatnot. Like, cool, now you put the reps in, but you've got a week and a half to put the reps in, like, as opposed to 3 months. So, yeah, I see your point. I actually agree that, like, it seems like you're doing it sort of meekly. It's like, this is a minor negative. I agree. It is a minor negative where, like, you're not playing against Perks all year. Yes, you're going to be worse at mid lane now because of that. Like, to some small, potentially measurable degree. I think that does make sense. I still put G2 as number three. To the earlier question, put SKT above them. I think that team is absurd. You have Faker, who's at least close to back on form. He says he's at like 80% right now. Mm-hmm. And he'll add that other 40% soon. That's how that math worked. So we'll see when it comes in.
Yeah, if you want to, like, because so much of this came out of the question where a lot of people were like, G2 better than SKT above them. I was even considering SKT for taking
number one.
Yeah, exactly. Taking the
I
entire
them, sure.
thing. Like, yes, they had a rocky spring. They ended on a 15-game win streak. If we're going to, shout out 1907 Fenerbahce for their 20-game win streak. Yes, all of SKTs were not clean, and they had to work very hard for a lot of them. But anytime you put together a run like that at the end of the split, it is impressive.
And against that level of competition.
Exactly.
Sure.
And then people are also going to bring up how Griffin in the finals always seem
they're chokers.
Exactly. And their draft always seems to get like kind of stuck in a rut. It feels like they feel like they need to do something super special.
Maybe scrim results told them that, right? Maybe they had just been getting absolutely trashed over those last couple weeks by SKT, and they're like, well, can't play standard. We lose every single game. Guess it's Talia Pantheon.
And some of the buffs, even specifically, like Faker's already playing Azir. Azir got another buff. I feel like this team is getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about, you know, recency bias and stuff like that as well. So I'm trying to like kind of condition that a little bit, but it does. And maybe also because I'm so old and I have seen SKT, all of the iterations of SKT, like that feeling is building inside me again where I'm watching them play and I'm like, oh God, it's going to happen again, isn't it? Like, it does seem like this team has gotten so much better over the split
and
that I think some people are underestimating them.
And across the board, right? Like, they don't really feel like they have a super weak role or a super exploitable position. In the past, everyone would always point to, when you talk about the dominance of SKT, it's like, ooh, but like Bengi, what, mm-hmm. you know, you could mm-hmm. your jungler could smack up Bengi and then you could beat SKT. Well, like, Clid is a beast. Like, he's actually really, really good. He could easily be the best jungler at the tournament as well. Teddy and Mata, I think, are on fire. Yep. Faker is Faker. Yep. They have Khan. Like, it's not the SKT that we have seen, you know, kind of that was struggling over the last couple of years.
Well, yeah.
This is, you know, a revamped roster that was built to compete with these super teams. They have done that. And I think that it's going to be very exciting to see them, especially against IG. Like, I am just so excited for that. I know after IG won Worlds, you know, Rookie was kind of like, oh, well, it wasn't quite as sweet. Like, I'm very, very heavily paraphrasing, can't remember exactly, but it was just like, he didn't get to beat Faker, so it didn't mean quite as much, you know? Like,
mm-hmm, sure.
Because Faker has always been the final boss. Faker is the greatest of all time. No one's going to debate you on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Rookie wants to be the best, so you got to beat the best. And I think this is such a cool opportunity to have this clash of the new world champion who absolutely slammed the competition at Worlds going up against Faker. And I kind of want Faker to just have his resurgence, right? Like, I want Faker to just smack down Rookie and just, you know, it's like, oh, you had a good year last year. You know, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm Faker. Like, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm back.
It's the SKT 3-0 IG semifinal into the TL 3-0 SKT final. Like, yes, that's the ultimate.
The most likely.
The most likely path. Yeah.
This is, before we can continue on the conversation, okay. But there was a thread on Reddit that was kind of cool. And maybe you guys can think of this while we're talking. And it was like, give your 90%, your 50%, and your 10% scenarios for MSI. So, like, you know, as an example, it could be like, oh, your 90% is IG winning, your 50% is SKT, and your 10% is G2 or whatever, right? That would be the most vanilla one. But people had their hot takes, and I just thought it was kind of a fun format.
So my 50% is like IG wins MSI. It's like they're about equal to SKT, and I put those as like a tier above everyone else. I mean, I'll put my 10% as like G2 wins MSI. Like, I think that's pretty reasonable for them, that they have a decent shot at it. My 90% is like TL gets out of groups, right? Is like, well, there's a chance that they like get upset in the best of fives and the play-ins. There's a chance to get upset in the group stage, but probably not.
So making
like,
me nervous.
I mean, they're like, I mean, I'll put you at like 1% that SKT doesn't get out of groups, right? Like, there's odds for everything down the line. It's just not 10% for a team that good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So there's my 90-50-10, because I put IG as my number one team.
Okay.
Just like, and I will always take the history of like, well, they just won Worlds and they didn't change the roster, so like, they're my best team. Come at me. Like, you have to prove to me otherwise, and no one has yet. So like, to me, they're just the number one team.
So what is your full ranking from top to bottom then? Because I feel like I don't like it when that happens a lot, but I feel like we have a consensus.
IG is S tier, like SKT is an S minus, G2 is an A plus. Like in that they're close.
I mean,
like,
literally what from, you know, how they're gonna play. So literally IG first, SKT second, G2 third,
TL's good, TL
four.
I'll put Flash Wolves at five.
And
For
me, it's Fengvu Buffalo.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on Fengvu Buffalo. But I think they are.
Is Vietnam
the sixth best region?
I think Turkey could upset, right? So,
okay,
like,
sure.
I think you could put. You could
is
put
that our there. Only spicy?
I mean, again, it like my thing was, you know, if G2 is actually having to sub at Mickey X, right? Like, if he's getting limited practice time or his wrist starts hurting, I definitely think TL can reasonably be number three. But I think like. The on paper that's what most people are gonna have as a consensus. I think it's totally reasonable to bet on SKT, you know, if you feel like, hey, they're really gonna tear it off. But like, but as Freak said, you know, you're coming from a world champion team, didn't change their roster, looked extremely good again. And I think it's also in a meta that fits them really well. You know, you talk about flex picks for solo lanes. who can do it better than Rookie and the Shy, right? Like, they already showed that last year at Worlds. They showed it regionally again. Yeah. They have looked incredibly good. I mean, I think the one thing you might want to point to if you're trying to favor SKT over IG is I think Clid is more consistent than Ning. I think Ning is a beast, but as Kobe and I were watching a bunch of VOD yesterday, and Ning is going to do some shit. Some of it's going to be good, and some of it's going to be not so good. Yeah. Like, you know, he's going to do some crazy stuff, right? Like, he's like MLXG Jr. I think he's less crazy. He's less crazy, but crazy. He does do some crazy stuff.
Maybe he's senior then. He's a little bit more
wise.
He's
wiser. Yeah, he's grown. Eight. I love it.
Yeah. So Ning to me, because we were watching a lot of the games and I always focus super heavily on jungle, it actually wasn't like, because for some of the MLXG ones to me, I was like, that is just a boneheaded play. Yeah. But for me, I'm like, Ning is just okay with 50-50 or going for kill trades, yeah, basically. And a lot of the kill trades, as I'm looking at it, are still, you know, good, a plus for IG, because he's kill trading for the enemy carry when he is a Rek'Sai at 30 minutes or 25 minutes. I'm like, that is a great play. Yeah, even though people watch it and they're like, he dived into four people, oh, by himself. That's like, if he can get that kill and do the kill trade in the one for one, even the one for one is extremely advantageous. Mm-hmm. So I even looking at Ning, I was just like, have a lot of respect for like the
bravery.
The bravery to go for some of them. But then we are watching a couple too where doesn't quite calculate, you know, a heal from someone else or something like that. And it's a one for zero.
And he has a bounty on his head.
And then and
he uses his stopwatch.
Exactly. And there are some things that he like doesn't take into account. And then the entire rest of the team kind of has to wait. Mm-hmm. But then in some of the other situations, literally 4v5, they would, you know, they started up Baron. They got Baron and won the fight afterwards as a 4v5 because their jungler died. And there are just so many crazy situations where even though Ning goes super deep, tower dives mm-hmm. into four people and stuff like that, and goes for kill trades or goes mm-hmm. for things that look super risky, they still, you know, got enough cooldowns or got positioning or got, you know, some sort of objective or something that it was advantageous for the team. So yeah, I got a lot of respect for him.
It's also, I mean, one of the criticisms always used to be for IG, like, you know, last year, especially regionally, Jackie Love was supposed to be the choker, right? Like, when it comes to big pressure games, he's going to run it down against RNG. He's going to run it down against some of these top teams and make big mistakes. And last year he did that in regional play. Then Worlds came around. He was very measured. He played incredibly well. Like, everyone already knew his highs were extremely mm-hmm. high, but he did have some of those low lows. This year, regionally, it doesn't really feel like you can even levy that criticism towards him. When you look at their playoff run, he was extremely consistent. He is very rarely dying in a bad spot. He's still having those high highs, but he's eliminated a lot of the mistakes, and it feels like his confidence has grown so much. Yeah. And, you know, then it just becomes so difficult to actually pick away at this team, right? Like, you know, they're such a strong team individually that, you know, maybe the one way you can kind of pick at them is it's like they're so incredibly confident that sometimes, you know, the Shy or whatever is going to keep going for these 1v1s when maybe you can punish them, things like that. But they're just such a damn good team. It's hard to really like knock them down too much.
Yeah. And you've got, as you're mentioning, Jackie Love, like, he's a year and a half into his career. Like, in his first year, he won Worlds, and now he's starting year two. And, well, he won a domestic title in, like, one of the stompiest 3-0s, like, in G2 fashion. This is a player who's probably going to keep doing really well. Rookie's obviously, like, starting to make his run happen. Like, I mean, that whole team is amazing. So, you know, I just go down, all five of them are amazing. But, like, that's why they're my number one team. And yeah, these players are going to keep getting better.
Yeah, the other thing that I really enjoyed watching, especially some of the older VODs, is just how quickly the team acts together. And sometimes we'll look at the overall team comp and be like, that's going to be difficult to operate in a 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're definitely going to want to, you know, keep the match split. And then you see them in like 2 seconds have double teleports come in or something. And because they all work so quickly to get their positioning and timing correct, even though they only have like 1 second, to make the initiation and have this window because they don't have a big tank to soak damage. They make it within, you know, the shroud duration or the root duration, or like, you know, Arise Seraph's Embrace Shield is the significant amount of defense that they need to pull this off. And they do so much damage that they can make that kind of very quick, almost surgical play.
Mm-hmm.
That I was just like, our team can't do that. I was looking at that team card, I was like, I don't think we can pull that one off, guys.
And that's what happens when you have five players who are like absolutely insane mechanically and work really, really well together. Yep. They can pull some stuff off that you just don't expect, right? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make sense on paper. And it's like, well, I guess if everyone plays better than their opponent,
yeah,
you can just do that.
Yeah. That seems to be IG the team, is they just all play better than their opponent. And now they're against harder competition. Like, keep in mind, like, the LPL is a league with 14 teams, I think it is now.
16,
like,
I think, yeah.
So I always, like, keep losing track.
It's going
up
to 20.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's going to 20 eventually. Yeah. I just forget where in the middle we are. Either way, so it's like, well, there's also a lot of, like, vaguely weaker teams. Not that, like, they didn't look good in their run here, like, for example, but I believe they didn't have to play RNG, right? I think RNG got knocked
out.
They lost
by the JDG.
Yeah, because JDG took them out for them. Did they not have to play FunPlus either?
Or FunPlus, I believe, also
lost. Yeah, because FunPlus is the other high team. So, like, they didn't have to play, I think, my other two scariest teams. JD Gaming is, like, a fifth or sixth place team in the final run. So, like, hey, goodbye Imp and Co. to make that run. But, like, there was a little bit of, like, you didn't actually, in this final run, play like,
they
the
did,
super,
they
super
did
top.
Play, okay, who did they play? They played against Top, who was 14-4 as
That's
well.
That's true. Top
was
a good team.
So, Top was another team that was, like, of their caliber. They were 14-4. There was essentially, like, the four teams that were, like, super beast. And they did have to play them.
They had to play one of them.
And they still beat them pretty heavily.
That's true.
It was 3-1.
Yeah. I just more think, like, to the line of, like, hey, you're just better than your opponents. Like, now you're against Teddy and Clid and Faker. And now you're not just better than these people. And so, it is going to require, like, some of that level of tempering.
Or are they? And that's what's exciting to find out.
Hey, if Rookie, like, just solo kills Faker at level 2, like, yo, all hail the new king, like, you know, that's sweet, but that's now the test, right? Is like, Jakulet didn't have to play against some of these guys.
It's a kind of a hard one for me to swallow because I feel like China has the most good teams.
That's true. I like,
there are,
like,
the most
their
good
seventh
teams there.
Team is still very good.
And yeah, and they're so, like, they have scrims in addition to all this stuff. I just feel like
their player base is enormous.
Competition and quality of opponent is not the thing I would attack for IG. Even though you want to see them on stage, Freak, I think that's your point, right?
Yeah. And
The one thing to kind of play a devil's advocate and, you know, argue Freak's side a little bit is just that I know there has been some concern about among, you know, LPL analysts and stuff is the talent going to get, you know, kind of like spread out too much as they're adding more and more teams? Because every time you expand the, you know, the roster of teams, well, those pros have to come from somewhere. And then those teams, if they want to make a splash, have got to get current LPL pros. You can't just bring up a full challenger team and expect to compete with IG. So you have to try to steal away stars from other teams. And then sometimes the talent might get spread out. I know that is a concern that I have heard from some LPL experts, especially as they're adding more and more teams. But I still certainly think for now, at least at the top, they have incredible, incredible teams.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to start. Let's do some Twitter questions first.
Let's go.
We got a good one from Fion, who was asking, you know, is the Shy in his current form just the best top laner ever, right? Like, is his current form better than any other top laner's ever been?
My first jump is to Marin. I think when he was, like, World Finals MVP and was, like, the big star of SKT on their second championship, third, I forget, in Europe. it might still be the Shy, right? Like, okay, they both won Worlds once now. That's cool. But I felt like Marin was similarly dominant, I guess, is the phrase for it. So that's an option. But I don't know. It's weird because I feel like every year we're like, this is the year of sick top laners. Like, there's so many good top laners. And it's like, they're all going kind of equal. And the Shy was the first one to, like, not actually just go equal with people. I felt like he actually was, like, a big carry force.
Mm-hmm. The Shy had the most moments that kind of wowed me. But my first thought was Smeb, actually. Was it like 2016 or something?
Okay. The Tigers era.
Yeah. The Tigers Smeb. I don't know. That one to me had a long lasting effect. But I think Marn's is a decent choice as well.
Yeah.
Any other ones?
I mean, I'm honestly, like, even just the fact that that's a conversation that no one's, like, offended by the statement, I think is a statement about how incredible Ashai is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As far as top laner that has impressed me most individually, it is actually the Ashai. I think this is a guy who single-handedly made me just start watching all the IG games, right? You know, like, last year, any game that the Ashai would play, I would watch. And as someone who was playing a lot of top lane, I just thought it was so fun to watch this guy play so many different picks and dominate in a way where the game is just about him and the difference between him and his opponent. And it was so massive in some of these games that it's just like, oh, well, you actually can't beat that team because Ashai just makes your top laner look like a gold player. And and that to me was just so astounding, where it kind of, you know, one of the things that I always think is so cool when you're watching pro sports is, like, you watch LeBron and you're like, damn, he's really good. And then you realize the guys that he's making look like absolute fools are 1,000 times better than you could ever be, and made everyone else look like fools at university level and below and whatever. And it's like, oh my God, like, they make those guys look that bad? And that's almost the feeling I get when I watch the Ashai, is I'm like, he just makes these guys look like clowns sometimes. Yeah.
I mean, there are definitely games where he has failed, right?
Of course. But everyone has.
Exactly.
He's human.
Exactly. You can pull those. And so maybe the other argument that you could make would be for someone who is more consistent.
Yep.
But I actually don't want that, because some of my favorite Ashai moments are when he's literally 10 HP. No, he's kiting this guy. He turns back around for the auto. Yeah. And the other guy just had his off of cooldown or something. So he knows his animation is coming out slightly quicker or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, he gets the tap at like 7 HP or something like that. And those are the type of moments where I'm like, yes, he's just keeping track of everything, like every little detail.
And if you want to dominate in that way, you cannot take the 90% play every time. Mm-hmm. You have to take the 50-50s and believe that you're actually just better than your opponent, and then you can do it, right? And there are going to be mistakes, and there are going to be, you know, the ones where you fall flat on your face. But, you know, like, especially in carry versus carry matchups, you got to take risks. It's not a consistent way to play if you just play safely and you try to go for farm and only do that. And I think he is a player that embodies, like, the carry style top laner more than anyone else. And I think he's definitely the most fun top laner for me to watch in the world.
By far.
All right. I got one as well from Philip Schmidt. What is the most interesting matchup that we will see? Now, we have to start it out with, of course, the headliner, Rookie and Faker.
Yeah.
We'll just get that one out of there, because everybody wants this. Rookie himself, Faker wants it. Mm. Every single, not only mid lane players, but, you know, everybody wants to see these two Titans go head to head in the mid lane.
And you got to wait to see it too. It's like the very end of the they have the partial schedule, because obviously only three of the teams are in right now. But yeah, it's like SKT plays G2, IG, and probably the other teams that come in before they play IG, sorry.
So I would say, you know, that is the most obvious one. You know, I'm going to be excited for TL Games, but I also think G2 IG is another one I'm really excited for, because I think that G2's play style, you know, when you listen to a lot of the LPL analysts, you know, talking a little bit to Raz and hearing him on broadcast and everything, you know, they talk a lot about, they believe the way to beat IG is to play IG style and just, like, best them at it, right? To, like, play winning lanes and go carry to carry and actually beat them. And I feel like G2's play style is that. G2's play style is smash lanes and play super aggressive and pick winning lanes. And I just think that should be an explosive game. Whether they can pull it off or not, I think it's going to be super exciting to see, you know, two teams going kind of like head to head in that sort of style.
Yeah, I definitely am excited for that as well.
Yeah, super cool.
All right, is that all our Twitter questions?
That's it.
Let's wrap it up then. That's going to do it for our pre-MSI episode. You can join us on Wednesday, May 1st at 3 a.m. Pacific time.
Bright and early.
For the beginning of the play-ins. Super excited. And we're going to have our international competition so close.
Change your sleep schedule with us if you'd like to. We're going to be living in the nighttime.
Fungu Buffalo headlines. And they're one of our favorites to make it out. So you'll see them right away.